to Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in on a Reaction Monday as the Texans fall to the Packers at the buzzer on a last-second field goal by the Packers. They are now 5-2. The Colts are 4-3 with their win over the Dolphins. So next week, if the Colts come in here, yeah, that guy's interesting, man. Next week, if the Colts come in and they're playing for a chance to be in first place in this division in a split with the Texans, coming up next week. So a big game. As we just heard from the head coach, he's passed it. They got to because they got a huge game for the standings coming up on Sunday. All right, before we get to the grades, and I see some people texting in, please give us your thoughts. What was C.J. Stroud's grade? Because this one is really interesting. The numbers are just awful when you look at the numbers, but obviously we know it wasn't all on C.J. when it comes to the numbers. So get his grades, but I want some people to, like, we got to get off the deep end here. Jerome here on Jerome Buttons here on YouTube. Now, Pep Hamilton is a better OC than Bobby Slowick. Like, guys, we've got to calm down. we've got to come off the deep end here. All right, still 5-2. Like, hey, reel it in. Got people out here trying to make heavy trades, trying to get multiple offensive linemen. Like, let's take a deep breath here. And get it together. No, Bobby Slowick has not fallen below Pep Hamilton at this point. All right, your grades here. C.J. Stroud, 10-21. Clint, 86 yards passing. Obviously, he's under 50% completion. 0 touchdowns, 0 turnovers, 0 picks. He was sacked 4 times. He did have 5 carries, 19 yards, picked up a big first down in the second half. How would you grade C.J. Stroud's performance, Clint?
This is a tough one for me because it's impossible to play the position when you're not protected, especially for 4 quarters, the rate in which he was. But there are moments. I think after the rewatch, I think there's 2 balls that he would like to have back from a standpoint of where pocket was collapsing, but he should have. C.J. Stroud's got to make the throw. Both of them underneath throws. I think the situational stuff, like I've said before, you know, C.J.'s got to get, and he's accelerated his NFL career and experience, and expectations come with it. At some point in time, a lot of what happens on the field in terms of situational football, when the offense is on the field, I think a lot of that has to partially fall at the feet of C.J. Stroud. So I'd give C.J. a B-minus probably. The situation at the end of the game, throwing the 10-yard out route out of bounds, allowing him to keep the timeout, throwing short of the sticks, like that whole scenario, not being on the same page with the head coach, not really understanding what you're trying to get accomplished there. At some point, C.J. Stroud's got to take control of those situations. It's not about Bobby. It's not about D'Amico. Like, the quarterback takes it. And then the couple of throws that he had that I think he probably wishes he had.
There was one on third down to Dalton Schultz that was a little bit behind him.
That's one of them. And then there was one where it was to his left. Again, I think it was Tank. And I don't know if he thought he was going to run a different route or if he was just trying to get rid of it because there was a little bit of pressure. But he misses him. He skipped it to him, and it should have been. He should have made that throw. So yeah, I mean, I would say a B minus. I mean, there's a huge plus in the fact that he didn't make it worse by turning the football. As much as he got hit, he could have turned it over. As much as he was pressured, he could have made some ill-advised throws and didn't. I'll go with a solid. Just a B is where I'd go with it.
A B. All right. I see some coming in. I give C.J. a C-minus, but we almost won the game with his worst game ever. C-plus from the text line. C.J.'s grade in isolation is a D. His grade accounting for the offensive line is a B-minus. C, he showed his frustration. Leaders lead. And that's the first time I saw him out of sorts, and he could and couldn't rally the troops. That was interesting there. Not seeing CJ get ticked off like, or he's slamming the helmet on the ground. Somebody said Clint, stop, that man gets an F. I can't give him an F. I would say I'm in the C minus range. Had he turned the ball over, I think we're going lower than that. I'm in the C minus range. Look, I mean, I understand he didn't have time, and there was pressure, and it was, and I think that's a big piece of it. But Clint, if you go back and watch it, at some point, right, you had to adjust to what your offensive line is bringing you as well. And I watched the second half again this morning. And there were just points where, yes, he hit his back step. And damn it, right now, like you did last year, you got to get it out. Mm-hmm. You got to get it out. And he wasn't doing it. And there were, and I'm not saying all the time, but there was like a third and four early in the second half where it resulted into the first drive. It results into a sack. He hits his back foot. Damn it, you know what you're in. You know what time it is. You see that they're walking everybody up. You see, you got to get that thing out. And he was so good at that last year where he was getting it out. And I think there were opportunities for him to do that. But, man, like the guy on the other side had two interceptions, man, and had damn near a 50% higher, passer rating than you had on the other side, man. 10 for 21, 86 yards. That was tough. And I think when we look at protection, I believe some of that has to do with him. Now, when they're just getting their asses kicked, or Titus is having Schultz or Culver or Stover stepping on his foot like that, you can't control that. But some of the free rushes, just corners and safeties just rushing off the edge free. Like some of that, many times is the quarterback. Like that guy's you. Like that, we see that guy, everybody up here. That guy's you, and he's just not. There was no moving over. So I think some of the pressure stuff is on him, and how I talked about he has the fixer in him.
Yeah.
Just from an emotional standpoint, and plays a couple of times. The one to Hutch was a big time play there and a big time throw, which I heard Vandy say play of the game to that point, but we didn't get a lot of that to me. So I think the best part about it is, you said, he didn't turn the ball over and make it, but he was clearly frustrated. And we can talk about this a little bit more this week, Clint, but the one thing we kept saying in the offseason is, yo, let them see it, get a tape for a year. Let them get 17, 18 games of him and Bobby Slowick and what this offense does and potentially what the weaknesses are. And Clint, it is two games that stand out big time, that when he gets pressure, and this isn't great. I mean, a lot of quarterbacks don't deal well with, but when you heat him up, he's not handling it great. Minnesota, we know what Brian Flores is about. And then it's coming from different angles, and he confused him. And the offensive line, when he gets heated up, he's throwing helmets. He's skipping throws. He's missing throws. There were times where he had time, and he ran out of the pocket when the pocket actually hadn't collapsed. That might be the book. We might start seeing – not might. We're going to see teams do exactly what the Vikings and the Packers did in these games until the Texans – get out of it. And I think Nico helps, but we're going to start seeing, like, okay, we're going to play, as you said, we're going to play these dudes tight, and we are going to come and heat him up because he is not responding well to it.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm not privy to the information in terms of how they're getting to where they're getting with the protection. I don't know. I think the one thing for me that will tell me more is the all 22. If there are, like you mentioned, the time you got to hit your back foot and get the ball out. If there are guys that are open, or if there are guys that are even running one-on-one routes and appear to be where he needs to go with the football, then that would change my grade drastically. you know, that's the one thing for me that I just don't know. The jury's still out for me on this particular football game. I don't know what was available and what wasn't available. When it comes to the protections and stuff, like, it's hard for me, given what we know about C.J. Stroud and how cerebral he is and how well he processes things. For me personally, he's down the list of responsible for the major issues with the protection. Now, obviously, he's not responsible for the just physical guys getting their ass whooped, guys tripping and stuff like that. But, I'll have to just take a closer look. For me right now, though, under those circumstances, as bad as that was for four quarters, ooh, man, it's it's hard to not just see ghost at that point in time and start bailing the pocket early when you're getting heated up from the inside, from the outside, from the front side to the backside. It's hard to operate at an even remotely high level consistently. So I have a hard time right now based on what we know of the TV copy of being too critical of Seven.
Yeah, 10 for 21, 86 yards, no touch, no INTs. I mean, it's not going to get an A. Someone said, let's do a grade for Mahomes. We can, and, you know, I don't know why you're going there. We can go here to the 10 for 21 and 86 yards. As I said, that wasn't all on him. It was 48% pressure times he was pressured on his dropbacks. Almost half the time on his dropbacks he was hit with pressure. It's not all on him at all. But some of it, you know, some of it is. You know, the one to say you're too critical of it, I think we're at a very fair level of criticism. He's touching the ball every time, and especially on some of the, like, the decision at the end, like, there was more than one route for him to throw. And I, like, to me, with D'Amico continuing to double down on it, like, hey, we got to win that one on one battle. No, it you saw it. He was a 10-yard route on 3rd and 15. And he was angling out of bounds. There's no way CJ should have thrown it there. He should have taken a sack, would have been better. Taking the fifth sack, running it. And he came out with conviction and missed that throw that led it out of bounds too. Anyway, like that, like, I don't know why D'Amico's doubling down on that. And I'll give Landry credit for following up on that.
That's
Dusty Baker cover guys right there.
Well, let's be honest too. I mean, D'Amico not answering that question is
the answer
is silly. I mean, that's you know what he's asking. I mean, everybody out there is at the two. My top two takeaways: number one, the protection was asked. Number two, situational football. You threw a 10-yard speed cut out route when it was 3rd and 13. The other team had one timeout.
And you want to get it bounced.
You're already in field goal range. What you want to do at that point in time is either throw the ball beyond the sticks, be aggressive to get a first down or a touchdown, or run it and force the team, the opponent, to waste the timeout, which they used in order to get their field goal unit on the field to kick a field goal.
You wanted to make it a 25-yard field
goal. Yeah, I mean, so it's... It's like, you know what he's asking. Like, don't get frustrated and then say, well, the goal is to complete every pass that you throw. Yeah, but is the goal to complete it 3 yards short of the first down marker, out of bounds? and stop the clock? Like, I mean, like, that's petty to be that way. He's covering up for
CJ or Bobby, both of them. Yeah. Like, that ball's got to go somewhere else, All right. Coming up, our players of the game. And listen, as I said to kick things off, the Texans, to me, I felt better about the Texans after this game, after having all the guys out, all the adversity against a team this good on the road in one of the toughest environments in the NFL to lose at the buzzer and having the lead with 3 seconds left. I felt better about the Texans coming out of that game. We'll talk about our players of the game. You can send yours in as well.
Sterner and Hughley is presented by Verlo Mattress. Get the best sleep at the best prices at Verlo Mattress.
Snap is down. The kick is up, and it's good. The Texans lose as time expires. 24-22 to the Green Bay Packers. Heartbreaker at Lambeau Field. They fought back. 7 lead changes in the game, but they come up 2 points short, and the Texans see their 3-game winning streak come to an end, dropping to 5-2 with the Colts up next week.
All right, boy. Andre turned his mic on off, didn't he?
None.
Oh, Andre. Andre's hot. Damn, I didn't have to come all the way, take my ass all the way from Provo, Utah up here for this.
Put him up!
I was listening to him late, boy. He had him a good game, that BYU-Oklahoma State game. He called him a nice one Friday night. But a tough loss there. But as I said, for me, with all of the injuries they had, I was very, very impressed that they were able to hang into that game against that opponent. But let's go to our players of the game. You can send yours in 713-572-4610. Those of you on YouTube and Twitch, Clint, we can start with you. Who was your Man Eye Institute player of the game?
Yeah, it's Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon has gone for 100 yards in every game that he's been healthy for 4 quarters.
I love Joe Mixon.
So do I. Joe was the lone bright spot, I think, offensively yesterday. And a lot of it, you know, he did with very little help. They were better up front. I don't want to take anything away from the offensive line, but I'm saying it in a huge positive for Joe Mixon. His ability and willingness to just run by guys that are supposed to be leading up in the hole, caged over one time. I think Shaq Mason did it one time. I mean, his vision of seeing a crease and hitting a crease, the explosion, the change of direction, it was big time on display Sunday. And I gotta go with Joe Mixon, man. I mean, when he's healthy, this offensive line and this run game has a really good chance you're gonna get 100 yards out of him, and that's a huge plus.
Yeah, he was special yesterday. I mean, and at some point, it you would think, and I can't wait till we see the tape, more of the tape, you would think that the adjustment, we clearly saw in the second half that the Packers made an adjustment to not just get, you know, crushed by Joe Mixon. You would think that would have helped the passing game at some point, but clearly that never was the case. But they almost offensively single-handedly won this game with the help of the turnovers, but him getting in, finishing through contact, and he was spectacular in this game. Like I said, you would think his performance would have led more to them to have the ability to throw the football better with play action. There was one where he got in the screen game. He got at least one of them where he broke out for about 12 yards and added that a little bit, but boy,
well, you mentioned later in the week we'll get into the layers of this. The screen game is something that I'm extremely disappointed in with the Texans, just across the board. I mean, you've got Dalton Schultz, a $12 million tight end. You got Joe Mixon. We saw the basic running back screen, I think, 3 times. We saw one attempt at a wide receiver screen, I think, with Diggs 1 time. Just the variation and the ability, boy. You see some of these teams out there, and the 49ers are one of them, where whether it's Juszczyk or it's Kittle or it's Debo or it's one of the wide receivers or Christian McCaffrey, there's just all kind of screens. Heck, the Kansas City Chiefs do it really well with their tight end. I'm just surprised, as much as they've kept Dalton Schultz in pass protection and stuff, how he hasn't slipped for a big play on a screen or something. The screen game in Bobby Slowick's offense has been underwhelming, to say the least. But Joe Mixon averaging 4.6 a carry and 2 touchdowns in a game where the offense really struggled otherwise was big.
Yeah, he was really good. All right, my Man Eye Institute player of the game is Neville Hewitt. I thought Neville Hewitt played a really, really good game. He had a couple of big moments. Obviously, the tip by Petrie that led to the interception that he took all the way back to the 11. To kick off the game, he had a really, really, really good stop when I like to say, when offensive coordinators like to get cute for some reason. Jacobs is averaging over 6 yards a carry. You got Jordan Love, who's like, well, how tall is Jordan? 6'4", 6'5", something like that. He's a tall kid. And on fourth and a third and a half, they went with a wide receiver toss that Neville Hewitt just sniffed out and got the ball back for the Texans on and got like a 1 yard loss. And he led the team in tackles outside of Ross, but a lot of that is because Ross was just getting torched and he had to make tackles to end it. But I thought Neville Hewitt, especially when you, like, to me, yes, there were moments where the linebackers, you know, obviously you give up 6 yards of carry. There were some drives there where Jacobs was just gashing. But for the most part, it wasn't like Ross where you were like, good God. I mean, they are just getting just destroyed. Yeah. This is losing the game. I thought Neville Hewitt and Hanson were really good. Neville Hewitt got a pick, a couple of big moments. So for me, Neville Hewitt played solid in place of those guys that were out.
Love it, Ron. I couldn't agree more. The penalty obviously was a bonehead move. Yeah. But boy, those two guys at linebacker, I thought they would get picked on in this heavy play action scheme, and they really did. And they threw the ball over the middle a couple times, one for a touchdown, but hard to put that one on either one of the linebackers. And
he got his hands on that one late that he almost tipped. That could have been the game.
He played. Both those guys played really well. But look, like we talked about this during the week, Ryan. It's D'Amico Ryan's position group. For whatever reason. This is just one more time on the defensive side of the football where D'Amico Ryans has had a ton of injuries and somehow, some way, puts like second and third string depth on the field and comes out with a product that gives you a chance to win a ball game. So, I like Neville Hewitt. I like Jake Hanson. Those guys played really well on Sunday.
All right. Tyler was loving this and laughing. But boy, we were dead wrong about what the hell happened in Austin.
What the hell happened
to the Longhorns? And also another big story that is kind of close to Houston developing in the NFL. We'll discuss that coming up.
Longhorn Nation, we're back.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, it is a Reaction Monday. We've talked about the Texans, they took that L yesterday to the Packers. They get ready for the Colts right here at NRG on Sunday. And it'll be a big one. But, Clint, Saturday was a hell of a day as well. And Alabama, they went down, and they've got two losses to Tennessee. And the Texas Longhorns, the number one team in the country, the team that I thought was clearly the number one, we both thought was clearly the number one team in the country. I said the only thing that's stopping me from not thinking this could be a comfortable double-digit win is that Kirby Smart generally has his teams ready to go.
Not so fast, my friend.
And my God, that was 30-15. That first half, I mean, like you thought. I mean, the Texans struggled offensively. That first half, Texas could do nothing.
Yeah, nothing 15 at yards all. At one point.
God.
Yikes.
And be honest with you, I mean, Carson Beck wasn't exactly lighting it up himself. I mean, he turned it over twice.
Yeah, you look at how that game went. Texas had two turnovers and they're getting thumped. They should have been. I mean, it should have been. They had the advantage.
Yeah, early on. So, yeah, what the hell happened in Austin? And Texas just, I mean, Tyler, I'll give it to you. Like Tyler kept saying, what happens when they play somebody? And Georgia was their best opponent. And Georgia, I will say this, Georgia had something to prove. Like Georgia came in with their best performance and the best they had played all season. But that was I just didn't see it. I didn't see it going the way it did.
No, hell no. Obviously neither one of us did. Like Georgia, first of all, they're healthy. Yep. But the bigger question now after watching that game is Texas got physically whipped. I mean, there is no question about it. that
I don't know who that number 11 fellow is.
Yeah, welcome to the SEC, bitches.
He's he's going to be a top 10 pick, but there's
Banks was too.
The tackle, right?
13 was
I think the big picture on both sides of the football all the way around, I think it was clear, and it got more and more clear as the game went on, that Georgia, because there was opportunities, whether they were making them for themselves or the referees were giving them opportunities. I mean, there were opportunities for Texas to get back in that game, and I thought they were there for a minute, but Georgia, just from a sheer physicality standpoint, they were dominant, man. Absolutely dominant.
Yeah, that first half was some of the best defense I've seen Georgia play, even in this run with Kirby Smart. That, like, a 13, he was at 13, 11. I mean, they couldn't do nothing. When my man started hitting that Conor McGregor, after that
11 was a dog.
After that sack, when my man Arch Manning realized he wasn't in New Orleans at whatever high school, at Newman High School, after he tried to get out of that corner and he has beaten that outside linebacker, defensive end, his whole life to the corner.
Yeah.
And old 11 tackled him standing up. He figured it out. I'm wondering y'all's thoughts on this too. 713-572-416, can jump in this. But do you think it was a panic mistake that he made where he just set Quinn down
100%.
And brought Arch in just for two drives, right? I'm thinking, all right, Arch is going the rest of the way. No, he finished the half, and then he came back, and Quinn came back.
No, in that moment, I was like, what the hell is he doing?
I was like, ooh. Because I thought it was
a huge mistake. Yeah, I thought it was a huge mistake at the time.
Because Orlowski said it during when they went to him before the halftime. Yeah, he said he needs to turn to Arch Manning right now.
Yeah, no. Look, I mean, that's not UTEP, boys. That's a different animal.
And
ideally, you want to get that guy in the game if the offense is playing well and they're at least. You don't want Arch Manning to get his first SEC action in terms of against a contender, in this case, the best team in the SEC. You don't want him to get when your offense through two quarters has 15 yards. Right? I mean, that's not when you want to throw the young fella in.
They can't solve these guys up front.
And look, if he'd have went in there and lit it up, then obviously it would have been beautiful. But the fact that he doesn't, then you go back to Quinn Ewers. I thought it was the right move to go back to Quinn, because if you were ever going to get back in that game, it was going to take a veteran quarterback that's seen it all, that the moment wasn't too big for, that could go out there and make a couple of throws. And that was your best chance of getting back in that game and winning. And almost, like I said, it almost worked for him. But I thought it was a mistake, and I thought it pulled back the curtain a bit on you know, Sark has been really strong and really out front and vocal about, you know, this is Quinn's team.
That's all they were saying. That's all Fowler and Herb Street were saying. This is he said it. This is his team. They were saying it, Clint, all the way up until Arch ran onto the field.
Yeah.
Because I was sitting there thinking, because they were talking to Booger and they were talking to Dan, just getting, you know, the little thing they do to get ready for the halftime report. They're talking to him, but they got the game in the background, and both of these jokers got on helmets. I'm like, why the hell both of them got on helmets? One standing, and then 016 came running on the field. I said, they're sending him in now. But to me, if you're going to make the switch, like, you got to get more than two drives, don't you?
I would think
if
so.
If you're going to make the switch, I'm with you.
I think he just saw that Arch was overwhelmed, missed a couple of throws, and realized that wasn't a route to go. So.
Because I thought
it wasn't
like,
good for either one of them. It wasn't going to give them a chance to come back, and it wasn't good for the quarterback.
It was just like they need to be more athletic. They could run, and he got a long run to kind of get them going, and then two plays later he got.
Yeah, you can take that thing 60 versus UTEP or UTSA, whoever it was. You ain't taking that Georgia. You ain't turning the corner on them boys.
I'll say this will make a fun. It feels like playoff potentially because there's really not anyone that's standing out, because Georgia can do that, but. That's by far the best Georgia has looked.
Yeah, no question. And here's the other thing, though, is what I think to bring it home to Texas and for Tyler, that to me this makes the UT A&M game significantly bigger. It was going to be huge anyway because of how long. But now if both of these teams, A&M and the Longhorns, they go in with one loss, and you could still lose that game and still get in potentially, but. Boy, for the loser to literally
LSU and A&M, that's before.
LSU games this weekend.
Yeah, this weekend. Yeah, they got Aggies opened up as 3 or 4 point favorites.
I was trying to think who else they had in front of them.
A&M's got to bring their A game like they did the week before last. Or was it week four last when they came out, Tyler, and Wegman?
Missouri, yeah. They beat.
When they beat
Missouri was their best game.
I didn't watch it, but Connor must have struggled this weekend a little bit. I saw some of Elko's comments.
I saw some 120 something in the yardage.
So Elko was talking about how. Here's the deal: is LSU? They just played Arkansas. I'm telling you, they're one of those teams like A&M that's doing this number here. That boy, they are
going up.
Yeah,
our radio audit.
Nussmeier's taking a step, and that offensive line is now they're looking more like an LSU typical LSU offensive line. It's going to be a hell of a matchup in College Station. It's in College Station, isn't it? They go to College Station.
I would imagine.
Honestly, I'm not
favorites.
Sure. I need to look.
Got to. I can't. I mean, I'm not trying to.
Yeah. No. You're right. I would think so.
If it was in Baton Rouge, then LSU would be underdogs.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's in College Station.
Yeah. If it's a 3-point, that sounds like it's.
Yeah, it's at Kyle.
That's going to be big, man.
Someone said, Sark said he was just trying to give Quinn a break to reset. He could have waited till that halftime.
Oh, yeah. He also said he was just trying to create a spark.
I was going to say, reset. Yeah. He could have resetted his ass at the halftime. Mm.
When I struggle next time, you going to try to create another spark, coach?
Yeah. Go to your third string guy. Hey, in the NFL, another big story, especially when it comes here, Deshaun Watson, torn Achilles. He's going to miss the rest of the season. He was booed from his home fans when he was on the cart, and some of his teammates took exception to that and didn't even cause them to talk crazy. Jameis and Myles Garrett, and I quote Myles Garrett, I believe, said he is
he's been a model
citizen since college, on and off the field. All right. I'm going to say this. I would not be surprised right now if Deshaun doesn't play in the NFL again.
Wouldn't shock me one bit.
He
still got cases. He's having to settle cases.
He's got cases, and clearly the reason why he was getting an opportunity is because there was a thought that he was going to be the guy that was here. It is clear that there is no thought. It is clear he has become less athletic, and now coming off of the Achilles injury that, you know, Clint, as we looked, that may be a year and a half, maybe, or at least the rest of this season, and I would imagine most of next season. And he ain't a backup.
It wouldn't surprise me either at all. But I did see some report to where that said Deshaun Watson is looking to get in touch and go with the same guy who did Rodgers Achilles. And y'all remember how that madness was.
Well, I'm just saying he can go all they want to with that, Tyler. I'm just saying.
No, I'm with you. Yeah.
He's not a backup. You don't bring Cam Newton to come in and be your backup. He ain't a backup.
I mean, he never
and
was.
And he damn sure ain't a starter.
He never was a backup that's going to come in.
Trying to be legendary.
And now, with what follows him wherever he goes, he's damn sure not a backup. I've been a believer of this with multiple guys in terms of like the circus that comes with certain guys. It's not worth it when the guy's a backup quarterback. It's just not.
I'm not going to let it take my joy.
Define the circus however you want. It's not worth it. This circus is one that has legal issues constantly in the conversation. So he's damn sure not worth it. So yeah, it wouldn't shock me one bit. I mean, because if you're the Cleveland Browns, even though you owe him a boatload of money, coming off an Achilles issue, he's not going to be ready to go full go next training camp.
And I can guarantee you, Clint, honest to God, they're going to have better quarterback play from this point on into next year.
Absolutely.
They're going to have better. And it's going to be, how do you go back to that?
Yeah. I mean, it's the one thing that could happen.
They're booing him off the field. Your fan base is booing him off the field. Mm. You're not going, like he's not playing again in Cleveland, I don't think.
I don't think he is either. And look, I think Cleveland's got to look at this thing, and I don't know what the contract looks like relative to injury guarantees and all that, but you got to start doing the math now of if you take the rest of this season and you take, let's say, half of next season and know you're gonna foot that bill anyway, what does the remainder look like? So what basically the cutting him now, what's it really going to cost you? He can't play. He's not an option to play. You're never going to get the value out of him. And so, you know, what does that look like moving forward? It's going to be interesting how they handle it, because it's, to your point, it's clear. This isn't a guy that rolls back in and quietly becomes a backup, and if he has to play, is on point.
And you can't, like, nobody is. I mean, he's been the worst. I mean, he's been the worst starter. Like, of the guys that have played, I mean, Bryce has been out. He's been the worst starter in the NFL, and it ain't getting better. He was 15 for 17 for about 100 yards when he got injured, but. Yeah, that those days.
Usually how it works, man. You're having your best game of the season. Finally, things might start slowing down a little bit, turning a corner, getting that rust knocked off. He's and
having,
pop.
Yeah, he was having one of them Bo Nix performances. 15 for 17, 101 yards. 3-4 yards a throw. All right, what you got coming up?
All right, the Texans being a Super Bowl contender. After this week's loss, where are you at with the Texans? Are they still a Super Bowl contender? Or are you having a hard time getting there? We'll cuss and discuss next.